good afternoon. Once again, it's a Monday. Welcome to Embracing the Chase, brought to you by InfinitelyHome.com, the website for first-time and affordable home buyers. Building Fortunes Radio and Blog Talk Radio, all of them bringing Embracing the Chase, a radio show presenting a unique personal improvement thought which will make your life and business better. Thank you for joining us again today. We're going to talk a little bit today about happiness. Because at this point in my life, I didn't expect to be starting over again. Being an entrepreneur is all about that, but I had gotten to the point to where I thought I was finally done. Unfortunately, that was not the case, because I spent most of my last decade, you know, starting new opportunities, going from opportunity to opportunity, each time optimistic that the latest company would be the one that I actually want to commit my life to, the one that I want to stay with forever, the one that would make me truly happy. But somewhere between my first hour or my third year, I begin to suspect that ultimately it just wouldn't work out. So now, as I rewrite the multiple versions of my business plan, I find myself thinking about how eerily similar finding a satisfying opportunity and finding a satisfying relationship are. In both situations, I think that you run across the same basic problem. You're determined to set the criteria that the other side must already possess or be willing to provide. You typically interview around before you find one that you see a real future with, and even then, you aren't convinced you found the one. The relationship, the opportunity, can still bitterly dissolve less than a year later. And why does this keep happening? I think many people ask the same question. I've written before about the paradox of choice, the idea that maximizers, those of us who won't settle for anything but the absolute best, are not as happy as satisfiers, who don't need the absolute best and are perfectly satisfied with great options. If you're constantly pursuing perfection, it's easy to see how regularly stressful days at work might jumpstart a new job search. But this paradox doesn't always explain why 1 year into a seemingly satisfying relationship or job, you suddenly get bored or want to quit. Instead, the answer might lie in another paradox. And frankly, new research suggests it's our longing for happiness that may be preventing us from achieving it. Recently, researchers at both Rutgers University and the University of Toronto conducted 4 studies to investigate how people perceive and pursue happiness. One experiment set up happiness as a goal to be achieved by asking participants to list the things that would make them happier or telling them to try to be happy while watching a boring film. In another experiment, happiness was treated as a goal that was already accomplished, with the participants being shown a funny movie. And while they listened to items that had already made them happy before. Afterwards, both groups shared a whole bunch of free time they felt they had. But here is the probable correlation. The answer, according to the findings, is yes, as it turns out. The people who saw happiness as a goal, the boring movie watchers, they felt they had less free time than those who had already achieved happiness. The comedy movie watchers. From researchers, they concluded that time seemed to vanish with the pursuit of happiness, but only when seen as a goal requiring continued pursuit, which suggests the more we pursue happiness, the more our perception of how much leisure time we have and in turn wellness becomes skewed. After all, free time is the only time where people can truly enjoy life experiences, which is why 3-hour commute to work, where you're packed like sardines, can take a significant toll on your mental and emotional health. The findings also suggest that it is a literal waste of time to try to turn happiness into a goal or something that you will one day achieve. In fact, this mindset encourages to trade experiences for material possessions in an effort to save time but still buy happiness, which is a scientifically proven poor substitute for genuine happiness. Moreover, the researchers found that when we feel we don't have enough time, we stop doing rewarding activities like volunteering or helping others, which again also has been proven to increase joy in our lives. I want to stop right there and I want you to understand something. Their conclusions were not addressing happiness. Their conclusions were addressing joy. And they are two entirely different things. And so if you're looking for joy, then it's time you created the joy. Happiness is not something you pursue. Happiness is a result of something you achieve. So in reality, they're two different words entirely, because it's only now that I realize that each time I start a sentence with "I'll be happy when," I am robbing myself of the potential happiness of that moment. How hard is it to remember something funny that happened, a positive feeling, or a grateful feeling to be alive at this current moment? Maybe it's time to admit that my ongoing desire to find a perfect job is the exact reason why I'll never find it. And rather than continuing my regular pattern of wishing and wanting to be happy, I put on a comedy version and count my blessings instead. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's like today. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Google Ads, but they have a special program for nonprofits. And it allows you to use Google Ads in a very unique way. And so I was busy trying to learn how to do this today. And I spent a lot of time doing it, thinking I was doing it the right way. But just to clarify and make sure, I gave Google a call to make sure I was doing it correctly. And come to find out that even though they had sent me a letter telling me that I was approved, they had not activated my account yet. That takes about 3 more days. So the reality of the situation is all the time that I wasted in anticipation of doing something which is going to be fruitful for what I want it to be ended up being a waste of time. And I thought to myself, why the hell am I busting my ass? Why don't I just let things happen? And I thought to myself, you know, you can't make happiness happen. Happiness just has to happen by itself. Because of what you've accomplished, because the environment you happen to be in, the people you're around, those all have an intricate role. And sometimes you get frustrated with those feelings. Sometimes you get frustrated with the people that you're with. But the reality is that it has nothing to do with happiness. It has to do with the circumstances. And circumstances that you happen to be in at that point in time have a lot to do with the creating the environment that you're in, which then creates the personality that you expand on as you grow. So what is joy? Joy is the feeling that I have when I wake up in the morning and my wife is beside me on the bed. Joy is the feeling that I have when I walk my dog and she's bouncing along and having a good time and doing her business. All things that she really enjoys doing. The word enjoy means to be in joy. Not N joy, in joy. INJOY. And it does mean that you are experiencing the joy of the moment. Joy is a momentary thing. And it happens to do with the actions that you are taking in your life, which allow you to feel that way. You're not happy at that point in time. You're joyful at that point in time. And they are totally different things. So I urge you to get some joy in your life. Do some things. My wife and I cut our dog's hair for the first time yesterday. Now I'm going to tell you something. She looks like she's got mange. She looks bad. But the reality of the situation is that we had fun doing it, and we laugh about it now. And it brought us joy. Not only because it saved us $65, because we did it ourselves, but that we did it in such a bad way, but still had fun doing it. So, you know, you do what you do to create those things. I believe that everybody can have joy in their life. And everybody can make their life better because of it. But if you're pursuing happiness, you are in the wrong race, my friend. Happiness is just happiness. It is because you are happy. That is the result of happiness. And you can't pursue being happy. You just have to have happiness to be happy. I know, it seems kind of ridiculous. It's like, you have to have a TV to watch television. But that's the way it works. So, think about it. We're going to take a short break. We'll talk a little bit more.
Do you want to learn more about affordable home ownership and what Ed Robinson with the National Affordable Home Ownership Coalition nonprofit has going on in the Sarasota, Bradenton, Florida area? Well, go to infinitelyhome.com and read all about it. Don't forget to go to the events page for upcoming seminars in the area, and the newsletter can be found on the Home Sweet Home page. See you on the website, which once again is www.infinitelyhome.com.
I'm back. I believe that happiness depends on basing your life on the truth. You know, freedom is more than just the absence of physical bondage. It's also the freedom of thought and the freedom to seek the truth and base one's life on facts rather than lies and deception. Deception should be considered an eighth deadly sin for its profound and cruel power to negatively alter the lives of those victimized by it. Individuals rarely deceive to protect others. They do so to protect or enable themselves at the expense of others. It is purely a selfish act that unfortunately is a fatal flaw present in the human psyche. And like many such unpleasant realities of humanity, the origins of deception probably arose from a strategy for survival. In this case, the need to trick one's adversaries or constituents to gain an advantage. Regarding the possession of property, maybe, or the acquisition of money, resources, political control, whatever it may be. Machiavelli, who lived way back in the early 16th century, wrote a treatise called The Prince. And he said that being virtuous only sets one up to be victimized by the majority of the population which lacks virtue. Instead, he said, it is necessary to deceive the public in order to maintain control over their minds and actions. Now, to be fair, Machiavelli arrived at his views during a period in Italian history when social unrest, corruption, and disorganization threatened to tear apart the country. And he saw that a successful leader would need to be secular and able to control others without the constraints of a moral compass, because most individuals in society acted in their own self-interest, without regard for the health of the state. A successful prince would need to preempt their counterproductive, ignorance by any means necessary. And he viewed deception as an important weapon in the prince's arsenal, which he should use liberally and at will to achieve a desired outcome, one that would serve the greater good. Most of us have come to understand that we cannot trust politicians or governments, as the seduction of political power to eventually corrupt one's character seems inevitable, but within the context of our own associates, family, friends, and lovers, we have a need, an expectation, and indeed a right to be told the truth and dealt with fairly. This reciprocity is a necessary foundation for building and maintaining these relationships. And when that trust is breached or used against us, it is particularly hurtful and destructive. Sadly, I have found few people who are worthy of such faith, and all too often one needs to be constantly vigilant to the possibilities that their own best interests are not being served by those closest to them. But be forewarned, it is easy for such vigilance to morph into paranoia, fear, and jealousy. Having to constantly monitor and try to figure out other people's activities and thoughts is exhausting, unhealthy, and is and of itself an enemy of mutual trust. That is why it is essential to carefully select one's inner circle. My father reminded me from time to time that it's better to be alone than to be badly accompanied. The truism has shaped my life, as I have had to learn the hard way that attractiveness and charisma often place a veil of deception between ourselves and those we seek as companions. I think, for people who are in our president's camp, because as charismatic as he can be, he throws off a factor which causes mistrust at every level. And I think it's an unfortunate thing in this country when the choices we have make him the better of all of them. Because we as a people mistrust everyone. And unfortunately, we've got to that point because of how we were raised and what we went through. I came up in the 60s, and I was pretty active from 64 till about 68, at the height of the power of our generation, when we were doing things that were disturbing to the public in general. And I look back on that now and I see how cruel and unkind we were to subject our parents and the upcoming generations that followed us to what we wrought, which was not good. From the time we were children, the qualities with the greatest power to influence our preferences are what we seek, what we try to fulfill, and they always have to do with either sight, sound, or scent. You know, we are forever drawn to facial symmetry, clear skin, bright eyes, a melodious voice, a pleasant fragrance, healthy hair, among other things. You know, I say now, when I see some guy who's got a head full of hair, lucky man, because mine is baby fine and receding rapidly. But unfortunately, if we rely on the presence of these attractive fissures to inform us about the trustworthiness and integrity of the person, they actually tell us very little about a person's character. Rather, they are nature's subtle tricks, the outward signs of a pervasive animal magnetism that drives procreation. So effective are these forces on our psyche that they override our logic and reason and compel us to share our hearts, minds, and bodies with people who may be completely wrong for us. Very early on, individuals endowed with these random qualities of attraction learn they are special. They witness how disarming their presence is and are seduced by its power to gain an advantage over others, because they learn that a mere glance, a touch, or a soothing word can get others to satisfy their needs. They are not as compelled to develop the deep interpersonal and reciprocal skills that long, healthy relationships are built on. So what can we use as a lead in to determine the subtlety and suitability of another person as a friend, associate, mentor, or lover? Observation. Watch how they react to various situations. Are their responses well measured to the circumstances? Are they quick to anger? Unwilling to confront conflict head on? Cool under pressure? Restrained in their volatility, or more likely to provoke others? When you're having a bad day, are they understanding and compassion, or more often redirect the attention to themselves? Are they generous with their time and resources, or all too often realize they forgot their money at home when it comes time to pay at the restaurant or the theater? This and many other character elements are available for scrutiny if you will only take off your blinders and be discerning. I was married twice. My first marriage didn't work. A lot of it was due to me, but some of it was due to the fact that it became, what have I done for you lately? And that led to the other things that destroyed the relationship. Luckily for me, and I've been married now 20 years, to a super lady who is amazingly unaffected by anything other than what's real. And we struggled early on just simply because I wasn't real. And now we go to great lengths to make sure that we're laying it all on the line. Sometimes I slip back in where I choose not to say something in order to smooth the ground a little bit, but it always ends up causing a rocky road. So at the end of the day, truth is what wills out. And truth is what you base happiness on, because at some point, if one's conduct is satisfactory, you'll have to extend trust and allow them more access to your life. But this is still not the time to give away the farm, because Russians are very fond of the proverbs to describe the human condition. One that the American public became aware of through President Ronald Reagan was trust but verify. This highlights the fact that we cannot completely know another person. We cannot always predict what they might do at some future point. People are able to hide their true nature for long periods, or some factor may cause them to change their character for better or worse. So, we need to trust for the integrity of the relationship, but still be vigilant. This is a very narrow tightrope to walk, but one of the essential components of self-preservation. If freedom is not free, then neither is the truth. The price of knowing the truth is to always be willing to have your notions of reality overturned. Because the fact remains that truth is not constant. Indeed, it shifts incrementally every day. These shifts may be insignificant, either positive or negative, or they may result in our having to reevaluate and remake our lives according to new and disquieting revelations. But what are the truth of your life brings you joy or sadness, your overall life satisfaction relies on you keeping the roots of your happiness tree firmly planted in reality. For basing your life on lies and deception leads only to despair, self-loathing, and disaster. The truth is always your friend. Keep it by your side at all times, and the likelihood of your navigating life's challenges successfully will be greatly enhanced. And as I think about today, I think that's good. Because the truth is that I need this program that they have. And the truth is that I wouldn't be ready right now to run it. And so all of the atmosphere in its wisdom has determined that I need these 3 days to learn how to do this right, to study what they say, so that at the end of the day I can make use of what has become available to us and make it advantageous for us as we move forward. So remember, the truth will set you free, and the truth is your friend, but be prepared for the truth, because the truth can somehow be a revelation that you never expected. So it's time to understand. There is an old movie that I saw, starred Jim Carrey, and he couldn't lie. He had to tell the truth all the time, and it caused him a tremendous amount of problems in the movie, and it was funny, the circumstances that he was in. But eye-opening this to the same, because when you tell only the truth, a lot of people can be hurt. So I leave you with that thought today, the conundrum of the truth. And I look for you tomorrow, when we'll discuss something entirely different and entirely new. You have a good evening. This is Ed Robinson signing off.